everyone. Welcome to your newest episode of the Cosmic Matrix podcast with your host, myself, Laura Matsu, and my husband, Bernhard Günther. And on this episode, we are going to talk about how to live a more authentic life. So a lot of people have realized lately how costly living an inauthentic life can be. And in the past few years, the pandemic and the chaos happening in the world has put many people into situations where they either had to speak an unpopular opinion, stay silent, or go along with a crowd that seemed to be walking off a cliff. And many people have discovered that there's also pain that can accompany authenticity and have realized that being authentic can cost you certain relationships. So I think we often think that being authentic will be this liberating process, but then we can discover in the process of sharing who we are that, in Gabor Mate's words, there is no painless authenticity. So when you risk sharing who you are, it comes with a gift, a gift of the freedom to be who you are, but that gift can also come at a cost of certain relationships who benefited off of you people-pleasing and being someone you are not. And one of the main questions I get asked by people, either in our programs or on social media, how can I speak up more during these times? So in this podcast, we're going to give some answers to this conundrum and offer several different angles for you to look at about why perhaps you aren't authentic, where that could be coming from, and how you can live a more authentic life. So in the first hour, we're going to discuss what does it even mean to be inauthentic? How can you tell when you're being inauthentic? And what does it mean to be authentic? We're also going to discuss how inauthenticity can manifest in health problems later on in life, the relationship between healing trauma and becoming more authentic, how authenticity can actually be a protection against evil, and how shadow work and inner work really helps us to become more authentic. And in the second hour, which is only for members, so for those who are new to our podcast, we always do a second hour of the podcast, which is available for everyone who's signed up to our Veil of Reality membership. So if you want to join that, go to veilofreality.com and you'll see it under membership on there, or you can go to veilofreality.com/membership. And you can join and get access to all those second hours. So in that second hour of this podcast, we're going to discuss how attachment styles relate to authenticity, Pluto and Aquarius, how that relates to authenticity, the dark night of the soul and its relationship to being authentic. Also, how spiritual bypassing and the idea that spiritual people should be quote unquote nice relates to our inability to be authentic. How authenticity or inauthenticity and authenticity also protects us against Wetiko, which is the mind virus that we've shared about in several other podcasts, the wounded inner child and his or her relationship with authenticity, how going through the dark night of the soul is often linked to becoming more who you authentically are, and the importance of authenticity, truth, and awakening. So before we get into that, we're just going to do a quick announcement. The next round of Embodied Soul Awakening, which is our 14-week private online group coaching program in psychological and spiritual self-work to embody your true self with Bernhard and I, is started enrollment right now. So this round is going to be from May to August. Again, these courses are always limited to 35 people. That's the max that we can really take on to have a really intimate, great group experience. And if you want to join us, you can join us at thetimeoftransition.com. So it's thetimeoftransition.com. And there's an application there so you can apply and learn more about it.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's a very great topic, an important topic for reasons Laura just mentioned in the introduction, you know, the necessity to become authentic. So before we dive a bit deeper into all these topics and give more practical suggestions about what it all means, it's best to start to actually have some definitions or pointers of what it actually means to be inauthentic and what true authenticity is, because there are many kinds of misperceptions around that as well. So what does it mean to be inauthentic? Well, in a nutshell, we start living an inauthentic life when we fall into, for example, the trap of comparison and are very concerned about what other people think of us and the way they see us. which most often results in people pleaser program and a lack of boundaries, that nice, be nice program, what Lord has mentioned it, which also can relate to spiritual bypassing. What happens then? We then create a mask, a fake mask, a false persona, and build that fake persona to appear a certain way based on the social image we'd like to portray to others in order to be liked. We then start to identify with this external ego personality, this fake persona, mistaking it for the true self, and create an even further disconnect from our true self and essence. And then any feelings and emotions that actually contradict the ideal image we have of ourselves and we like to portray to the outside then get pushed into the unconscious. That basically results in suppression of our wounds, traumas, and so-called negative emotions we don't like to feel, express, and show. So this is the basis of a lot of shadow, not projection, but suppression. And this inauthenticity then is basically based on an internal split, which means it's a contradiction between how we act, what we say and do, and how we actually feel internally. It's not being truthful. It's not being in integrity. That's how it relates to integrity as well. An integrated human being is fully authentic. When we get stuck in inauthenticity, we also lose our inner guidance connected to essence and the divine. This is a very key point. And then we're looking more externally for guidance. That's also inauthenticity is behind the creation of authoritarian followers that fall easier into following orders, not questioning authority or what's happening in the world because of their loss of authenticity and hence their inner guidance, loss of essence. The more the severe this internal split, which also most often due to trauma, wounding, and obviously conditioning, the more we look externally for happiness, guidance, love, and fulfillment, and the more we create the false personality we start to identify with, again, mistaken for the true self. Now, over time, living in an inauthentic life can also result in depression and even illness and disease, which we'll talk about on later on. No matter how much you try to think positively or how much you may even take care of your physical body with right nutrition, diet, and exercise, right? This is also very important to understand. This dissonance between how you present yourself to the world at the cost of your authenticity is an internal conflict that also keeps your creativity and also abundance stifled. And we can see this conflict, this internal conflict mirrored in the world. Why? Because as within, so without. The outside world is also a representation of our inner life, of humanity's inner life, inner chaos, inner fragmentation. And we can see that we, for the most part, live in a fake superficial world because most people are, quote unquote, fake, superficial, and disconnected from essence, being inauthentic with themselves and others because they're identified with the false program personality they mistake for the true self.
So I also just want to add that inauthenticity and identifying with a false self is the norm in the world. So when you go amongst the world, you're going to see a lot of people who have a certain persona that they put on that's not in touch with their real feelings and emotions because they haven't even looked into that. I think emotional suppression is the norm in our society, in the Western world at least. So we have people who build up these false personas to protect themselves against having to feel how they really feel. And that's who we interact with. So when we start to become a little bit more authentic, we have to be doing it just for us. We're not necessarily doing it because all of a sudden, oh, we're going to have these amazing, authentic relationships. That will come eventually, but we have to do it because of the liberating feeling it feels, way it feels rather, to be who we really are. Like that's the point of a lot of psychological, and I would even argue spiritual self-work, is to be more authentically who you really are, connected to God.
On that note, it reminds me also, it's important to understand since it's such a program and people are conditioned to be inauthentic because they identify with the false self. It's not that they're purposely are being inauthentic. They think they are authentic.
Yes, right? They haven't looked further. And I think that this dissonance between how you present yourself and how you feel inside, if you're someone who starts to go within, engage in any work, that dissonance gets even more and more uncomfortable. And, you know, a lot of people that at least I speak to want more deeply fulfilling relationships on a soul level. But, you know, it's as the famous Mott Khan quote, people can only meet you as deeply as you've met them, as they've met themselves, and you can only meet people as deeply as you've met yourself. So yes. If you want true intimacy and soul connections with people, you have to be meeting the world in that way, and not in a way that you think of like a conscious person or a spiritual person acts like. You need to be raw and honest and vulnerable yeah. with yourself, and then you can extend that to how you relate to others.
So on that note, let's list some pointers what it actually means to be authentic. Well, number one, authenticity is not a role play. It's not to certain rules how to behave in a certain way. That's, again, another persona mask. Very important to understand. And also, authenticity doesn't mean to just express any desire, feeling, thought, or compulsion you may have, or act from your neurotic, wounded, entitled ego, right? It's not a cult of personality. It just doesn't give you permission just to project on everyone and just quote unquote mistake your opinion for authenticity.
Exactly. I want to really point that out, because authenticity doesn't mean you have to go around being an asshole all the time. Exactly. Actually, that could be revealing. If your authentic nature is to go around and being an asshole all the time, that says more about your own inner state than actually the truth of that person. So, you know, that's why we're going to touch on later that it really needs to come as a byproduct of your inner work, that you can be authentic and not be an asshole, that you can be authentic and you can be truthful, and you don't have to be rude or crappy to people. You can, I prefer to lace our authenticity with compassion and consideration for the other person. So I think that's a really common misconception that people say, oh, I'm just being authentic. And it's like, no, you're actually just being an asshole. And then you're saying it's authenticity, but it's just you wanting to be a jerk.
Yeah, you mistake your shadow projections for being authentic.
Yeah, and maybe those are your authentic shadow projections.
Yes, that's right. Ultimately, authenticity truly means to act from your true self essence, which is your connection to the divine. That's the ultimate quote unquote goal and aim, and make the personality a clearer mirror or transducer of the true self as an expression of the true self and values based on truth.
Yeah.
And ultimately, then there's no division between your outer and inner life. You're not hiding or living two lives, which is a key point. As Lord has mentioned, I've seen many people started to live or living two lives, and especially what happened over the past 3-4 years with how they present themselves to the outside world, what they say, but what they really think and feel within themselves. So it's literally like almost living like two lives. And that friction can result in the stifling of the life force, even disease and illness over time, which we'll get into. Now, genuine authenticity means also to be in touch with your true self, your essence, the divine within. It also relates to, as I hinted at before, your inner guidance, intuition, and express this essence through the instrument of the ego personality. That's it, kind of the overview in a nutshell. And ultimately, and we'll talk about that as well, authenticity relates to the process of individuation. And we have talked about this before in other podcasts, the process of individuation, getting out of the consensus state of the masses.
Yeah. Okay, so let's dive more into the high price of inauthenticity and how inauthenticity can manifest in health problems. So this is something that Gabor Mate covers a lot in his work. I learned it when I took his course, Compassionate Inquiry. He also wrote about it in his book, The Myth of Normal. And essentially, I'm just going to give you the little notes from that, from the book where he talked about it. So basically, he begins by referencing how in 1987, a psychologist named Lydia Temoshok proposed that there was a personality known as type C personality who had a high instance of cancer and other illnesses. So for those, I mean, I'm sure people know, but type A tends to be very rigid and they tend to be very productive and very organized. Type B tend to be more creative and kind of disorganized. So she defined one that was known as type C. And she said type C traits included being patient, unexpressive of negative emotions, particularly anger, and compliant with external authorities. She had interviewed 150 people with melanoma and found these patients to be excessively nice, pleasant to a fault, uncomplaining and unassertive. They were identified as pleasers. While anxious about their disease progression, their worries were focused in a specifically outward direction, away from themselves and towards the effect that their illness was having on their families. Gabor Maté also noticed something similar in his family practice, that it was the nice people, the ones who compulsively put others' expectations and needs ahead of their own and who repressed their so-called negative emotions, who showed up the most with chronic illness. And he says, "The reason I believe is straightforward. Repression disarms one's ability to protect oneself from stress. In one study, the physiological stress response of participants were measured by how their skin reacted electrically to unpleasant emotional stimuli, while the patients reported how much these stimuli bothered them." So this is a study they did. And it flashed on a screen. What it flashed on the screen were insulting or demeaning statements such as, "You deserve to suffer, you're ugly, no one loves you, you have only have yourself to blame." Three groups of participants were assessed in this way: people with melanoma, people with heart disease, and a healthy control group. Among the melanoma group, there was a consistently large gap between what they reported, that is, to what degree they consciously felt upset by these scornful and disparaging messages, and the level of bodily stress their skin reactions betrayed. So basically, they didn't experience the stress consciously, but their body did. That's the key thing. In other words, they had pushed their emotions below conscious awareness. This cannot help affecting the body. After all, if you go through life being stressed while not knowing you are stressed, there is little you can do to protect yourself from long-term physiological consequences. So let's just stop there real quick. So this is a really important thing, because we may think like, oh, I'm not people pleasing. Oh, I'm not stressed right now. But your body can be telling a totally different thing. Like, I've seen this a lot of the time, even in myself, that, you know, you think you're not stressed, but you actually are stressed. And if you're used to emotional suppression as a default, what you're used to as your default state could just be a state of stress as well.
That's really fascinating. So then people may be even thinking they are not stressed out, but it's so suppressed, they're so disassociated or fled affect that they actually don't understand. That they are actually under stress, but they don't know they're under stress.
Exactly. So that's a really key aspect of it, is that sometimes, you know, sometimes we like, we'll go cover this later, but sometimes we don't even know when we're being inauthentic. Sometimes we don't even know when a relationship is wrong for us. And this is where the inner work, embodiment work, somatic work comes in handy, because as your being changes, you start to sensitize yourself to these things. That's been my experience, at least, is when I was first starting my own spiritual journey, where I was engaging in a lot of spiritual bypassing, I didn't actually start to notice little moments where I was being inauthentic, or I was involved in a relationship that wasn't right for me. But when I got into somatic work, which is why we focus so much on somatic work and embodied soul awakening, I started to sensitize my body to the point where my reactions to people, situations, my authenticity started to change radically, because I was more in tune with those bodily sensations. Okay, so to just close it off, here's Gabor Maté's list of the personality features most often present in people with chronic illness. And he says he's found them to be prominent among people with all manner of chronic illnesses, from cancer to autoimmune disease to persistent skin conditions to a gamut of maladies, including migraine headaches, fibromyalgia, endometriosis, chronic fatigue syndrome, and many others. In these particular order, these traits are: 1, an automatic and compulsive concern for the emotional needs of others while ignoring one's own. 2, a rigid identification with social role, duty, and responsibility, which is closely related to the next point. 3, overdriven, externally focused multitasking, hyper-responsibility, based on the conviction that one must justify one's existence by doing and giving. 4, repression of healthy self-protective aggression and anger, and harboring and compulsively acting out 2 beliefs. 1 belief being, I am responsible for how other people feel. And 2, I must never disappoint anyone. And he basically summarized in the book that we have 2 core needs that are sometimes at odds with each other: a need for attachment and a need for authenticity. So I'm about to play a video about that, but did you want to add anything to what I just said?
No, I want to also share something about a little story Gabor Mate talked about, but go ahead and play that video first.
When a child is born, the child has two needs. The first need is for attachment. An attachment is contact, connection, love. Without that, the human child does not survive. Any mammalian child or even an avian child doesn't survive. So that as soon as you get past the level of reptiles, the reptile is hatched. The mother's long gone by then, and the reptile infant either lives or dies, but there's no attachment to a parenting figure. As soon as you get to the level of birds now, the baby bird has to have an attachment with the parents. The parents have to be attached to the baby. Otherwise, the infant simply does not survive. Mammalians even more so, and most so the human, because we're the least developed, the least mature, with the least developed brains, and the most dependent for the longest period of time of any creature in the universe. So our attachment needs are enormous, and they remain important throughout lifetime because we have to have attachments to form societies, social groups, without which we don't survive. So attachment is a huge need. We have to connect, belong, be loved by, and love. That's just a basic human need. But we have another need as well, which is for authenticity. Authenticity is the capacity, as I said earlier, to know what we feel, to be in touch with our bodies, and to be able to express who we are and manifest who we are in our activities and in our relationships. Now, why is that? Well, think of a human being in the evolutionary period who's not in touch with their body and their gut feelings. How long do they survive out there in the wild? So authenticity is another huge survival need. Great. So far, so good. But what happens to a child where the attachment need is not compatible with the need for authenticity? In other words, if I'm authentic, my parents will reject me. If I feel what I feel and express what I feel and insist on my own truth, my parents can't handle it. And parents convey those messages unconsciously all the time. Not because they mean to, not because they don't love the child, not because they're not trying to do their best, but because they themselves are suppressed or traumatized or hurt or stressed. So I convey that message many times to my children, believe me, without any conscious desire to do so. In fact, it was the very opposite of what I wish to convey. But that they're not acceptable the way they are with their emotions the way they are, that's the message my kids got when they were small. And most children get that in our society. Now, what does the child do with that? Well, if I give up my attachment for the sake of authenticity, I lose my relationships on which my life depends. Therefore, there's no question. What becomes suppressed is our authenticity, our emotions. And then we become 25 and 30 or 35, 40, and we don't know who we are. And somebody asks us, what do you feel? You say, I have no idea. And how many times we've all had the experience of having an inkling of a strong gut feeling, but we're ignoring it. We're ignoring it and we get into trouble. Well, that tells us what happened. What happened was that at some point we found out that it was too costly for our attachment relationships to be in touch with our gut feelings. So then it becomes our first, not our first nature, but our second nature, to suppress our feelings, to lose touch with ourselves, and to suppress our gut feelings. And then we pay the cost later on in the form of addictions, mental illness, or any range of physical illnesses. But it all began with this tragic conflict that children should never be confronted with, but are all the time, between authenticity on the one hand and attachment on the other. And even as adults, so many people are suffering because they want to be themselves, but they're afraid to be because they know, or at least they fear, that if they're themselves, they're going to lose important attachment relationships in their life.
Yeah. So that's how we'll be talking about this as well, how authenticity relates to attachment.
Yeah, he just summarized it, yeah. Is that there is no, in his words, it's not from this video, but he says there is no painless authenticity. So we will risk relationships which benefited off of people pleasing, off of being a false self when we start to be more authentic. And I think a lot of people have experienced this in the past few years because because of the world situation, they've been forced to take an unpopular opinion. They've been forced to speak up against something that they knew was wrong. Or maybe if they didn't speak up, they suffer the consequences of having to live in an authentic life around people who they couldn't share their real thoughts or views or feelings towards. And that has health consequences.
Yeah. This is really important to understand, because there's no easy road to authenticity. Authenticity is not just this gateway to more love and authentic relationships. Everything's going great. No, it will actually expose relationships that are actually not working. It may disrupt interrelationships. Your authenticity may trigger people. There's such a thing as painless authenticity, as Gabor Mate said. In fact, from a bigger picture perspective, the whole Matrix program wants people to be inauthentic and not authentic, right?
Yes.
It programs people to stay, to not question authority, just to go along, don't trust your gut feelings, don't trust your intuition, don't have original thoughts.
Yeah. And, you know, being able to speak from an embodied place means that you're in tune with your bodily sensations. Like a point that he made is that we get so used to suppressing how we feel, especially if it happens in childhood, that we may, as adults, not even know how we feel. And so when someone asks you how you feel about things, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people, how do you feel? And they have no idea, because they've been so out of touch with their authentic feelings that they, when asked about how they feel, they don't even know anymore.
Exactly.
So we're going to also play another video with a perfect example of this type C personality. He talks about a woman who found out she had cancer and then basically had to go through this journey herself.
Well, let me tell you about a friend of mine who lives in Calgary. Her name is Shannon Duke. And Shannon is 48 years old now. And when she was 37, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. Now, stage 4 meant that the cancer was already in her bones by the time it was diagnosed. At that time, she had 2 young children, age 1 and 3, and married to a well-to-do businessman. She herself was a very high-functioning executive for Microsoft in Calgary. And then she's diagnosed. She had the perfect life, perfect marriage, perfect home, of course. And then she's diagnosed. And healthy, physically, you know, fit. Always ate well. And then she's diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. And she has a transformation. Now, she gets the best medical advice she can get anywhere in North America, and she traveled to New York and elsewhere. She got the best medical treatment, and with that, she was given 1 year to live, because that's the prognosis. Stage 4, despite the medical treatment, chances are you'll be dead in 1 year. Now, a year ago in February, just a year ago now, Shannon traveled to the Napa Valley of California with some of her friends, and they celebrated her 10th year survival and her 47th birthday. And the transformation that she experienced was that when she was diagnosed and started paying attention, she realized that her life had not been her life, because she was sexually abused as a child. And her response to the abuse was, of course, as many children will experience, it can't be about the adults, it's about me. So if this terrible thing happened to me, I must be a very bad person. So I have to be very good to compensate. So the good daughter who doesn't talk about it, doesn't disturb the waters, the good employee, the good student, the good wife who doesn't talk about the husband's addiction issues, because that would again disturb the waters. And when she's diagnosed and she decides she wants to live, she says, the hell with all this perfection and goodness. And she confronts her family of origin about the abuse that she had endured, and she confronts her husband. And she starts leaving an authentic, and she leaves the job, by the way, which wasn't her. Wasn't really expressing who she was. Now, 11 years later, the cancer is still in her bones, but it's completely inactive. But she knows that if she wants to stay alive, she needs to stay authentic.
Boom.
So that, I believe that many of these issues are reversible. I'm not promising a cure here to anybody, but Shannon really underwent a major self-journey. And she continues every day to work at it. And she practices her spiritual ways, which she ignored all those years. And she pays attention to herself, and she keeps clearing this stuff out. and she is the picture of health. Her and I give workshops together sometime. So that there's ways to get there, but it's a commitment. And of course, it might threaten the attachment relationships. So that's always your call.
So that's a key thing, because she, you know, and what's interesting is that the way that he painted in the beginning, oh, she had a great relationship, great life, great job, which is something I hear from people a lot, is that, oh, I have a great relationship, great job, etc. But then when she started being authentic, the case was actually different, that her husband was addicted, she wasn't saying anything, that she was sexually abused as a child, and that was affecting her, that she, in fact, didn't really align with her job.
And she had like a very highly successful job, but it was not her. Mm-hmm. She just maybe just did it for the money, for the image, for attention, to cover up deep internalized shame. We talked about that before. So that's very profound, very understanding, very important to understand. And that goes back to what she actually started engaging is deeper psycho-spiritual work to connect to essence, the true self, to be that authentic self. And her body was giving her all the signals and, you know, getting sick of not living her authentic life. And I would argue that goes back to this internal friction I mentioned before between how we present ourselves and who we truly are within ourselves. And for most people, they're not even aware of that split because it's unconscious.
Yeah. And the defense mechanisms and the lies that they tell themselves cover it up, which is really kind of one of my biggest points, is that you can't be authentic unless you're first honest with yourself.
Yeah. And I heard many stories about that before as well from some clients I've worked with back in the past in my bodywork practice. You know, that's also maybe the classical midlife crisis that happens around 40, right? When people realize that they have not lived their own life.
Yeah, I've seen it happen all ages. So not just the Uranus opposition or the midlife crisis. So yeah. Did you want to share also about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and what she said about it?
Yeah. So there's this amazing woman, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Some of you may have heard of her. She has done work, I think, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s for decades. She was called the Death Lady, not because she is an evil person, but she has worked with people dying on the deathbeds, help them transition, right? Very profound work. She's also coined these famous five stages of grief. That's based on her work. But obviously she was present of many, many thousands of people dying at the deathbed and hearing their last wishes or their last words. And with it, there were some regrets people voiced when they were dying. And it's fascinating that the most common regret, according to her, of people on their deathbeds was that they said that they wished they had lived a more truthful life with more authenticity and that they didn't live their own life. And that's exactly what the realization this woman realized, which Gabor Mate described, that she realized I wasn't living my own life. I was quote unquote successful in all ways and I looked great from the outside, but it was not my own life. And there's another great quote I want to share from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She says, "It is very important that you only do what you love to do. You may be poor, you may go hungry, you may lose your car, you may have to move into a shabby place to live, but you will totally live. At the end of your days, you will bless your life because you have done what you came here to do. Otherwise, you will live your life as a prostitute. You will do things only for a reason, to please other people. And you will never ever have lived, and you will not have a pleasant death. We think sometimes we are only drawn to the good, but we are actually drawn to the authentic. We like people who are real more than those who hide their true selves under layers of artificial niceties."
Yeah.
Boom. Very profound. As one of my teachers also said, it reminds me, he always says that authenticity is irresistible. And that's really the key. That's the kingdom to true love, to true also abundance, prosperity, to a true life, to your soul purpose, is authenticity.
Yeah. So how can we become more authentic? So I'm going to repeat my first point is you can't be authentic unless you're first honest with yourself. So this means noticing how you really feel about things, acknowledging your true thoughts about a situation, acknowledging the truth of what's going on in your body, paying attention to those certain sensations, and giving voice to it when necessary. So I think the biggest thing is that we tend to, over time, lie to ourselves about our situation. We may be in a relationship that's not right for us, and we lie to ourselves and we say, oh, it's not that bad, you know, but our body is telling us a different message. Or a job, perhaps, that we don't feel aligned with, but, or maybe we just go home every day and we just feel totally drained and empty. You know, that's usually a signal that, I mean, you could be overworking yourself, or maybe that's not in alignment with who you really are. Because when you're doing something in alignment with who you really are and that's authentic for you, even though it still can be work, you tend to get more energy and inspiration from it most of the time. So you need to be able to be honest with yourself. This involves being self-aware, noticing what it feels in your body, especially when you're inauthentic. So the moment, like, just notice this when you go out in the world, when you say something that's not actually how you really, that reflects how you really feel or are, notice when you're inauthentic and notice how that feels when you're inauthentic. And then the opposite point is be aware when you are authentic with someone and how that feels within you, because there's a dissonant energy. There's an uncomfortable energy behind when we are inauthentic, even in the subtlest of ways, you know. And sometimes, you know, it's on autopilot. Like, for example, if someone at the grocery store asks us, how are you doing? And we're having a really bad day. Most of us will just say, good, I'm fine. Right. But just notice how that feels. It doesn't mean that you need to like dump your whole day on the person working at the checkout who's just asking you to be polite. You know, but just notice, start to notice how that feels, because awareness of the moments you're inauthentic and the small moments that you maybe are authentic is the first step.
Yeah. I would also say it's not that easy. You don't become authentic overnight. It's a process, because as Gabor Mate said, inauthenticity is also based on suppression of a lot of emotions, feelings, and all these kind of things. So becoming more authentic with yourself, stepping into that, will open up not a can of worms, but will up deeper layers of your being, of maybe emotions and feelings you have suppressed for a long time that may not quote unquote feel good, but need to be felt in order to be transmuted to become even more authentic and connect you to your true self and essence.
Yeah.
Because inauthenticity is a defense mechanism for all the stuff we don't like to feel or see.
Exactly. And we'll go into more of what is like driving that inauthenticity in the second hour. Mm-hmm. So noticing when you're inauthentic, noticing when you are authentic. And, you know, a lot of people talk about how can we protect ourselves against evil lately. Well, first of all, shadow work is really critical, and it's not only critical for a defense against evil, but it's critical for a defense. It's a critical to be more authentic. So, you know, when we see evil in the world and we're unwilling to also look at how evil plays out within our own lives via subtly, via the ways we lie to ourselves, or even more gross ways, the way we harm others and don't realize it, there's a huge link between authenticity as a protection against evil and shadow work as a necessity to become more authentic. And I'm going to read a quote, actually, that I wrote, I just realized. So when you engage in sincere shadow work, or people who engage in sincere shadow work should feel safer to be around, mainly because, not only because they're more authentic generally, so they're more authentic, they're more straightforward, because they've looked at all the uncomfortable parts of themselves that most people hide. So, you know, when I talk about some of my stories about like addiction or some of my traumas I've experienced, I've processed them and I've looked at them from so many different angles. I can just be real about it. There's no shame around it anymore with me. It's just what happened, right? So doing the shadow work and healing work will make you more authentic and straightforward with others, because you face the lies within yourself. However, the average person tends to not only put on this inauthentic mask, but they tend to constantly project disowned parts onto others. So if I hadn't done shadow work and healing work on my own past, I would just constantly judge people who were like drug addicted or who were really struggling. That would be my projection, because I was unwilling to look at that part of my past. And so that creates madness and confusion in relationships. So shadow work will generally help you be more authentic and straightforward with others because you face the lies that you tell yourself.
Excellent.
And also another quote I'm going to read related to authenticity as a protection against evil. This is from John Sanford in his book, What the Shadow Knows. It's a short quote. And he says, honesty is the greatest defense against genuine evil. When we stop lying to ourselves about ourselves, that's the greatest protection we can have against evil.
Excellent quote, because that ties really into deeper esoteric spiritual self-work and going beyond what a lot of people focus on nowadays with the, you know, truth movement matrix. Yeah, exposing the lies out there, the corruption, everything, but everybody's so externalized. But it's almost quote-unquote much easier on a superficial mental level, information level, to expose the lies out there as opposed to facing the lies you tell yourselves. And from an esoteric perspective, as Gurdjieff said as well, lies to the self are the most harmful, more harmful than anything else, because you betray yourself.
Yes.
You go against your own nature. You go against your essence. You go against your soul purpose. And that's how you're then being manipulated by the occult forces, by the matrix, by Wetiko. Metiko, we'll talk about this in the second hour. Wetiko feeds the inauthentic self. It wants you to be a copycat of your true self. It's a very intense deception. So facing the lies you tell yourself is the hardest and most courageous, because it takes also a high level of self-responsibility, and the wounded ego easily wants to fall into the blame victim trap.
Yeah. And speaking of just touching on what you said about betrayal, is that when we end up in relationships where we experience continued betrayals of trust, someone isn't who they said they were, a lot of the times, and what I've noticed in myself, in my own life, in other people I've worked with, is it's actually stemming from self-betrayal, meaning your body, your gut feeling, there was something within you that knew that something wasn't right and you didn't listen to it. So the betrayal we experience in the external world is a reflection about how we self-betray, listening to our own feelings and gut feelings about someone.
Yeah, I just want to say I definitely can confirm this, because on a personal level, I've experienced quite some deep betrayal over the past couple of years from some friends, longtime friends. But after deeper self-inquiry, it's true, I was betraying myself because I didn't trust my inner impressions, my gut feelings, and what I've already felt, and was projecting it externally. So self-betrayal relates to facing the lies within.
Yeah. So I'm going to close with one more Gabor Mate video, just a short 1 minute video, and then I'm going to talk about inner work and how it relates to authenticity. So here is, it's only 30 seconds actually. So here we go.
It's true. If you're authentic, you might lose some attachment relationships. That's going to be painful. But which pain would you rather have? The pain of being authentic and losing some friendships that were no friendships at all?
Mm-hmm.
Or the pain of losing yourself and mm-hmm. all its implications and all its impacts on the body? This contest between attachment and authenticity can be a painful one. But you can decide which kind of pain you want.
Very powerful. You know, what do you want? Lose friendships that weren't authentic to begin with, or stay inauthentic and lose yourself?
Yeah. And then even worse, it can end up in illness and cancer. So there's a high price to pay of living an inauthentic life. And I think it's really important we acknowledge that, and that our body will give signals. If we get in touch with our body, if we get in touch with our gut feelings, if we get in touch with ourselves through inner work, through sincere inner work, we can become more authentic. So I'm going to close with this quote by Marion Woodman. So she's one of my favorite authors in the Jungian tradition. So, and she says, we know we can change ourselves when we realize that we are not dependent on how we feel or how others feel about us, nor on what the situation is around us. The values we hold, the choices we make within ourselves and for ourselves remain our prerogative. In most situations, if we begin to change, to do our own inner work, to accept our own darkness and work towards consciousness, the situation will change. We begin to emanate a different energy, one that exudes a sense of autonomy and authenticity. So she's basically elaborating on what we just said, that when you do your inner work, when you do your own shadow work, when you accept your darkness and works towards consciousness, not only do the outer situations change, but you emanate a different situation, one that exudes authenticity. So authenticity is a direct byproduct of your own sincere inner work.
Excellent. Beautiful. So that being said, if you want to dive deeper into this inner work as psycho-spiritual work, again, we start enrollment for the 14th round of our Time of Transition Embodied Soul Awakening 14-week private group coaching program that's limited to 35 people and by application only. You can find out more about it at the website thetimeoftransition.com. Go there, find the information, and fill out the application, and we'll be getting back to you. It's key point nowadays to step. Now, authenticity will also connect you to your deeper soul purpose. It's a whole spiritual process in itself. And now in the second hour, we dive deeper into attachment styles, what Laura and Dr. Gabamati just alluded to, and how they relate to authenticity. And we look into trauma and authenticity, the process of individuation in the context of Pluto and Aquarius, and how this relates to authenticity. It's a big Aquarius theme, authenticity, obviously. How spiritual bypassing and the idea that we should be nice relates to inauthenticity. And we look into Wetiko, the spiritual soul mind virus based on Paul Levy's work and the Native American concept of Wetiko, and how this relates to authenticity and inauthenticity, along with the wounded inner child, the dark night of the soul, and into relationship between authenticity, truth, and awakening. Once again, if you're not a member yet, to have access to the second hour, go to my website, veilofreality.com/membership, and you can sign up there. And with that being said, we'll be right back.